Hello everybody, welcome to the Metal Hammer podcast. It is episode 182. I am Mel from Metal Hammer. Hope you're doing all right out there. And I'm joined today by the dream editorial team, the one and only Metal Hammer deputy editor, Miss Eleanor Goodman. How are you doing, El?
I'm good, thanks. How are you doing?
I'm all right. Yes, I'm pumped. The sun's out. I'm happy to be here. I'm good to go. We've got a lot of cool music to talk about this week. And we are also joined by the one and only Metal Hammer Reviews editor, guardian of the underground, Mr. Jonathan Seltzer. How are you doing, Seltz?
Very good. Yeah, it's underground still doing all right, so I seem to be doing my job okay.
Good, still there. Good. Second anything goes wrong, we all know who to blame.
Yeah.
We are doing a big review roundup this week. It's been one of the biggest couple of weeks in the entire year so far for not just big releases, but just absolutely fucking amazing releases, to be honest. So we've got a lot to dig into for the review roundup today. But before we get stuck into all of that, I must remind you, I'm literally paid to remind you that we have an awesome issue of Metal Hammer magazine that's out in shops across the UK right now. It is paying tribute to the one, the only Joey Jordison, who was taken from us so tragically early on this year. We have a huge tribute to his life and career in this month's issue. We reach out to former bandmates, colleagues, friends, peers from around the industry, telling us some amazing Joey anecdotes, amazing stories from across his life. It's all only in the new issue of Metal Hammer. And there's lots of other stuff in the latest issue as well, of course. We've got our huge 10-page Bloodstock review is in this month's issue. We had an amazing time at last month's historic Bloodstock Festival. You can read all about that in the latest issue. We also go inside the Metallica Blacklist. We reviewed every track on the Blacklist on last week's show, and we interview some of the bands that produce some of the covers of the Black Album that make up the Blacklist. That's all in this month's issue as well. We've got brand new interviews with the likes of Ginger, Spirit Box, Ministry Legend, Al Jourgensen, Svalbard, Mayhem's Necro Butcher is in the magazine, Rollo Tomassi, Orange Goblin. There's just so much stuff, all only in the new issue of Metal Hammer. So go over to tinyurl.com/gethammer to get it delivered direct to your door, or go out to some real life UK shops and find a copy right now. I should also say that if you are a big Ginger fan in particular, you might want to watch out for something bundly that might be coming your way either this week or very early next week. So keep an eye out on the Metal Hammer socials for more news of that. Also want to give a big shout out to our wonderful sponsors over at Killstar. As always, they have awesome ranges available on their website. We are officially in spooky season, people. You excited about spooky season now?
Oh my gosh, so excited. So excited about spooky season. I feel like it didn't really happen very much last year because of all the lockdowns. And yeah, I just want to go out and buy all of the spooky chocolate treats that are out there.
And spooky chocolate treats are everywhere. And there's going to be pumpkins. It's going to be great. If you want to get in the mood, you should go over to Killstar right now. They've got a load of great ranges that will definitely get you in the mood. They've got clothing, accessories, stuff for your body, stuff for your house, all genders, all walks of life catered for. They've got a new range out right now called Wrap Me Up, which will definitely set you up for autumn. Big spooky Halloweeny vibes there. They've got some jumpers I saw on there that give me big Freddy Krueger vibes, which is always a good thing in my house. So go over to tinyurl.com/killstarhammer to check out all the latest Killstar ranges. That's tinyurl.com/killstarhammer. Right, big couple of weeks for metal releases. Some of the best albums of the year, quite a lot of albums that I think we'll get into all three of our top tens, I think, come the end of the year, have been released in the last couple of weeks. Last week in particular was a massive one for major releases across the metal spectrum. And I think we're going to start with, I think it's probably fair to say, one of the most hyped young bands that have come along in the metal world in the last, I don't know, 10 years probably. I mean, there's so much exciting about these guys. I am, of course, talking about Spirit Box, their long-awaited debut album, Eternal Blue, dropped last Friday, out on Rise Records. Feels like it's been a long time coming. So much love and hype for this band. And I think it's probably safe to say that, I mean, from our point of view, El, this album has lived up to the hype, has it not?
It has lived up to the hype. I love this record. I've absolutely love it. Every single track. I heard about Spirit Box from just it coming up on a Spotify playlist. And I went back on YouTube and watched all the videos. And then I just kind of wondered what they were going to do next. And then there was Holy Roller, of course, which came out with the Midsummer style video. And that just made them into this sensation. Everybody was talking about them, and this album just doesn't disappoint. For me, it sort of feels a bit like a kind of White Pony moment when there's just sort of I know, it's a big statement to say that. It's a big statement to say that, because that's one of the best records of all time. But it feels like there's some kind of alchemy that's happened. There are all these electronics, riffs, abstract lyrics. Like I said, there isn't a bad track on there. Every track's fantastic. Has this atmosphere that's kind of sincere but ethereal. It takes the best stuff from tech metal but just keeps it completely modern. And it has that kind of poppier end of it as well. It's so slick and so brilliant. But like I said, it's sincere as well. It's not just kind of music that is throwaway. There's actually heart behind it too. I just think it's a great record.
Yeah, it's amazing. And it is funny that you say White Pony, actually, because the first thing I kind of made actual notes of when I started making notes on this record, obviously we've been listening to it for a few weeks now, is just the gorgeous production on this record. And that is obviously something that really made White Pony stand out when it first emerged. I mean, production on modern metal albums is such a kind of, I don't know, sometimes it's like a divisive topic. It's obviously quite an important topic. But for me, like, the way this album has been produced for the style of metal that it is so perfect, because it's crystal clear, it's really polished, but it still sounds heavy as fuck. The electronic elements sound really kind of atmospheric and ethereal. But when those riffs come in, they just sound absolutely colossal. And I mean, Courtney LaPlante, who is already kind of just, you know, she's obviously been on the scene for a while with I Wrestled a Bear once and everything else, but it feels like with this kind of era, the Spirit Box era, she's just kind of arrived at this fucking superstar of the modern metal scene. And she's a phenomenal vocalist. Her cleans are like deep and soulful and affecting, but her screams are really guttural and gnarly and cut straight through you as well. And kind of just to riff on what Elle's already said, really, like, Eternal Blue, this album to me, is like a perfect crystallization of the evolution of modern metal over the past 5 to 10 years. It's got elements of metalcore in it. It has those beefy, dragging, Gojira-esque riffs that pretty much every decent modern band is utilizing now. It's got a healthy dose of nu metal stomp and swagger that, again, is a thing we're seeing more and more of in modern metal bands. There's a big slice, like Elle said, of like techie, genty riffing in there as well. It's an album that's basically like cherry-picked all the things that are being utilized by modern metal bands right now, but it doesn't sound kind of throwaway or a bit also ran or just kind of like a greatest hits of modern metal like a lot of young bands in the scene kind of do, which is fine as well. There's a lot of band, you know, like the Tetrarch album is a bit like that. It's like, oh, I've heard this before, but it's done really well here. Like, this sounds fresh and unique and exciting and new, and it's just, I mean, it's fucking great. I mean, you can cherry pick like what references come from where, you know what I mean? Like, the main riff on Hurt You is basically Here to Stay by Korn. That's fine. You know, the song Yellow Jacket featuring Sam Carter definitely has some architecty elements on there, and it kind of really works with his vocals on there because of that. Secret Garden is super techie with the bass lines in the verse. It sounds like the kind of thing you'd hear like thundering over Tech Fest at about like 6 p.m. in the evening or something. But then it bursts into this really high energy, emotional, bouncy chorus. I just, like you, Elle, I don't think there's a bad moment on this album. I know Holy Roller was kind of like the song that like went viral, and the Midsummer treatment for the video was so great. I actually think Circle With Me is actually an even better single. I think Circle With Me is the best single put out by any metal band this year. It's catchy, it's heavy, it's emotional. It has a chorus that gets stuck in your brain forever from the first time you listen to it. It's just immense. Like, it's just, yeah, and I think this band is just about living up to the hype. I do. I mean, I have seen some reviews that suggest, and you kind of almost could have alluded to this, Elle, with the White Pony thing. I've seen some reviews suggest that maybe this could be like a Slipknot debut album. This could be like a Korn debut album. It could be an album that genuinely redefines like metal moving forward. Would you go quite that far with it, Elle?
Yeah, I would. Like, I hate to be one of those, like, wankers. Can we say wanker? I don't know. Like, I hate to be one of those, like,
what do you mean? Why can't we say wanker?
I don't know.
I've dropped, like, 3 F-bombs already this podcast.
I hate to be, like, one of those day one wankers. I obviously wasn't there on day one. But because I got so into this band before the hype started, to me, the hype thing, like, is an irrelevance. Like, I'd already watched all of their videos and already was, like, fully in on this band. I think I mentioned them on the podcast a bit. And like I said, I don't say that to be a day one wanker. Just that the hype, to me, isn't a thing because I was already on the Spirit Box train, and this is just delivered so well. It's just so brilliant. There's just so much in every song, and there's so much propulsion as well. Like, we haven't even mentioned like Silk in the Strings, I don't think. Like, that song is incredible. It just goes from all these electronic layers into this massive like upbeat bit, and it just soars. There's so many moments in this, like moments of quiet and then just these contrasting moments where everything really takes off, or where Courtney just lets out like a massive scream. And you mentioned Sam Carter, but Yellow Jacket, what a song.
Yeah,
that is such an incredible song. And to open with some like Sun Killer as well, that just builds and builds and builds. I just think there are so many moments on this record, and it totally lives up to the hype for me. Like, we've done lists and things online before about, I don't know what the exact headline is, but something like 10 debuts that are perfect or something, you know. And to me, like, this would go on there. This is like one of these debuts that is just 10 out of 10. I love it.
Yeah, it's pretty astonishing. I mean, Jonathan, I know this kind of stuff isn't strictly in your wheelhouse in terms of like, you know, what gets you hyped and stuff, but you were saying earlier, like, you can like even appreciate kind of where this album is coming from and what it is.
Yeah, objectively speaking, I mean, like I said, all the reference points you put are just ones that don't really have any kind of meaning for me, I guess. There's not things I kind of respond to, but I can see that it's really well put together. I can see that, you know, it's genuinely emotional. And I think what it also shows up is like how much sometimes the metalcore scene can be by rote. As far as like, you know, the emotions are almost like just tied into a particular framework of how a song should sound. And so they don't really feel genuine. Like, if you're really honest to yourself, you're not really going to sound like anybody else. And that's usually a good sign of like, you know, being an emotionally honest record. So you do get the sense of like kind of revelation, maybe, if you're really into it, that you might not get from your run-of-the-mill post-hardcore or metalcore bands. So I've got nothing against them. It's not something I'd ever kind of put on to listen to more than once or twice. But even I can tell that the hype, as it were, feels very organic. Like, I don't see anyone saying, why is this band getting hyped? It's just people talking about their responses to it. So,
yeah, I think that's fair. And I think that thing of like how the album's been put together is really important as well, because, you know, it sounds cynical to think about, you know, a very specific structuring of an album sometimes. Like, sometimes it's just like, we almost want bands to go, we've got a load of great fucking songs, let's just put them on a record and see how it goes. But like, every kind of second of this record feels like it's in exactly the right place. Each song feels like it's exactly where it should be. It's such a lovingly crafted album, and you can just really feel that from the way it flows through. So yeah, I think it's a fantastic record. So did our reviewer Danny Levers, who gave it a glowing 9 out of 10. I mean, there's a lot of 9s and kind of 8s out of 10s in the latest issue of Hammer, because that's just how many great records are out there at the moment. And yeah, Danny gave this album a 9 out of 10. She called it a staggeringly brilliant record that resoundingly delivers on the hype. I think you can read that review in full over on metalhammer.com right now. And I agree with that, and I agree with everything else said. I think it's a fantastic record. And unbelievably, I don't even know if it's my favourite album that came out last week. That's how good this kind of last few weeks
are. It definitely was the best album out last week.
Well, I know it was your favourite album because you've been obsessed with this band for ages. But I don't like, you know, I'm kind of just being honest. I don't even know if it's my favourite record that came out last week, which is absolutely crazy, because what also came out last week, and I think unfortunately maybe kind of suffered from a slight lack in hype in comparison, but it fucking shouldn't have, is the blinding new album from Employed to Serve. Their fourth full-length record, Conquering, is out now on Spine Farm. And this, to me, is just like, I feel like I've used quite a lot of superlatives on Spirit Box already, but like, this is just an astonishingly good record, this Employed to Serve album. I mean, everything Employed to Serve have done so far has been great. They're in a very different place from where Spirit Box are. Spirit Box have been on the scene a while, sure, but it's their first album. It's an album that is just carried along by such a weight of expectation and hype, whereas Employed to Serve are just kind of a reliably brilliant, forward-thinking band that have come out of the hardcore scene and been kind of plowing away for like, you know, whatever it is, 6-7 years now. Everything they've done has been really good. The last album, Eternal Forward Motion, which I think was 2019, I mean, that was very tellingly titled because it really did carry their evolution forwards from the first two albums. It brought in more hooks, more groove-oriented riffing. They talked at the time about how they were utilising nu metal influences. That's the second time I've said this already. Nu metal is a thing again. And like that, and stuff like that to kind of bring in those big, monster, simplistic riffs out. That was a killer record as well. One of 2019's best albums for sure. And so in that sense, I feel like this new album, Conquering, it's not necessarily a huge surprise because I feel like it is very clearly continuing the direction that Employed to Serve have been sailing on for quite a while now. But my fucking God, the way it ties everything together that they've been building towards at this point, and the riffs on this album, like, Sammy Irwin has always been a great riff writer. There's killer riffs over everything Employed to Serve have ever done. But this record is just like riff after riff after riff after riff after riff. After that intro to Universal Chokehold kind of plays out and kicks into that first super Slipknot-y riff at the beginning, I honestly don't know if there's 30 seconds that go by on this entire album that doesn't have a riff in it, that doesn't have you pulling that "oh" face you do when a big badass riff drops. Like Keir Starmer in the House of Commons, that face, like that "oh" face. Like, it's just unbelievable. There's like thrash metal on here, like Exist and Twist the Blades have these kind of chuggy, thrashy riffs. There's nu metal-y riffs on here. There's Slipknot-y riffs on here. There's big like stonery riffs on here. Like there's riffs that sound like they could have come off like a Crowbar album or something. Like it's just like every possible kind of big fuck off riff. Like, there's death metal riffing on here as well. Every single kind of big fuck off metal riff you could want to hear on an album is on here. But it's not like, it doesn't feel disparate. It doesn't feel thrown together. Again, much like Eternal Brood by Spirit Box, the whole album feels really carefully crafted and each song sounds like a song. They all sound unique. They all sound completely of their own. They've all got their own DNA. They all stand alone. Any of them could be released as a single and go off live. They all sound like they'd be amazing, you know, a festival or something like that. It just never, ever lets up. I mean, even the final riff of the whole album, Stand Alone, is just so fucking bowel-churningly heavy. It's like this big, horrible, weighty doom riff or something. It's just absolutely relentless. And I know we kind of think of Employed to Serve as coming from the hardcore scene. And they do. And they are, you know, they're kind of a spiritually a hardcore band, I would say. But this is a fucking metal album, man. Like, there's plenty of hardcore in here still. There's lots of breakdowns and everything else. But I honestly defy anyone who likes metal of any kind to not be able to pick out a dozen riffs from this album that they love. Do you know what I mean? And I think it just never, ever, ever lets up for a second. There's not a moment on here that isn't filled with something, whether it's riffs or breakdowns or screams or hooks or whatever. I think Sammy's clean vocals on here are really great as well. I mean, Justine sounds awesome as always, just like savage gravel throated screams all the way through. She sounds great. I think Sammy's clean sound really cool on here as well. He's got kind of almost like a kind of 90s grungy kind of stonery vibe to some of his cleans on here, which I think is a really cool extra element that they kind of built up. And yeah, to me, like, Employed to Serve are one of those bands from that UK hardcore slash metal scene that maybe haven't had quite same of progress as it feels their music deserves, like the support they get deserves as well. Like, brands like us have really pushed them, you know, Kerrang have pushed them hard, you know, other UK brands have pushed them quite hard. It feels like Employed to Serve should, in a just world, be a bit bigger than they are right now. And I really hope this is the album that does that, because as an album, this is as good as anything that's come out this year. It might end up being my favourite album of this year, like when all is said and done, which is crazy because this is one of the best years for metal albums I can remember. But I think this album deserves to be heard by as many people as possible. So if you've spent the last week, like, deservingly listening to the Spirit Box album, because it is fucking brilliant, get this Employed to Serve album in your ears as well, because it is just, I think it's magnificent. I think it's an absolutely unbelievable album. What you said about the Employed to Serve album, Mel?
What an incredible record. This is just so amazing. just like you said, it goes so hard. Like, you just listen to it and you're like, whoa, the power of some of these riffs and the way the songs progress. It's just so hard. Justine is a total hero as well. Her vocals are incredible. There's some really awesome call and response parts on this as well. There are some gang vocals. I saw someone on Twitter the other day talking about, like, what are the best mosh calls of 2021 or something. And, like, this has mosh calls, like, that bit in Mark of the Grave where she just goes, "You're all dead to me." Amazing.
Yes, so
what,
good.
What a call. Like, this is a record that just demands to be heard live. Like, I would just love to see them play these songs. Like we're saying with Spirit Box, every song is fantastic. There's just not a bad song on here. They could pull out any one of these for a live show and it would just sound incredible. There's a lot of, like you said, there's kind of that thrashy bits in it as well. There are bits that sort of remind me of like what Power Trip do and that kind of using thrash in a more like modern kind of way. They've talked about Slipknot and Hatebreed and there's a ton of Slipknot influences on here, but it doesn't sound like they're just trying to be Slipknot. It just sounds like they're taking some of the best bits of brutality and then just like pummeling themselves with them.
It's like Spirit Box in that sense. It's like you can pick out the reference points and be like, oh, this sounds a little bit like this, it sounds a little bit like that, but it doesn't sound derivative. It just sounds like they've taken it and put it through their own kind of prism.
Totally. Like, this is the most exciting album to come out of the UK metal-wise this year for me. I just think it's so exciting. I just want to see them play it, really.
Yeah, I hard agree, hard agree. What did you make of the Employed to Serve record sales?
I really like it. I'm not a band I spent a little bit of time with them, but I really like this one. I like the, you know, I like the fact that it's got kind of also like kind of groove metal elements in it. Not that I'm a particular fan of groove metal, but I think that the fact they do come from the hardcore scene is key, because a lot of the kind of stuff that they're borrowing from, like with its new metal or groove metal, you know, for a large part, it's music for entitled white men. And they, I'm sorry, but it's just...
As an entitled white man, I can probably say that's fair enough.
and if you bring in much more... Whereas this is like a scream from the disenfranchised. And so when you bring a very different sensibility into it, it changes everything about it. It changes kind of... It's got like the framework, but it changes the DNA a little bit. And that's why it probably doesn't sound like, not I'm saying that Slipknot sounded entitled, but that's why it borrows from Slipknot, but doesn't sound like Slipknot. You can hear bits of other groove metal. In fact, you know, the bits it reminds me of are Lamb of God, or the one other groove metal band who seem to have a genuine sort of sense of injustice to them. That's not just about themselves.
Yeah, it's not anger. It's not kind of aimless anger at what, don't quite know what, but I just know I'm angry, like a lot of metal from that side of the world is. Yeah.
I love that groovy bit in The Mistake. Like, I love that song, The Mistake, and it's just like all this brutal double kick and then thrashy bits. And then when it goes into the chorus, it's just this amazing groove and you're like, yeah, that is so cool.
It's all so well timed as well. Like, all these different riffs come in at exactly the right point. And it's like, it's you know, obviously, we listen to a lot of the stuff while we're working and stuff. And this is the album that every time I put it on, I can't work while it's on, because I just keep stopping and going, oh, like every time something else comes in. It's just so, so good.
Well, it's very attention-grabbing. Yeah, it's very attention-grabbing, so I'm not surprised you can't work with it. But also, you know, not that it sounds like them, but it just takes me back to, like, that original era of metalcore, when metalcore actually meant you really can't tell whether it's a metal band or a hardcore band. I'm thinking of bands like Stamping Ground, who are like the, you know, who are like really the flag bearers for what metalcore was and should have remained. and so I like this. I really love this combination of like hardcore sensibilities. You know, just basically burrowing into this grooving new metal host and eating it out and just from the inside and just creating something of its own out of it.
Yeah.
Did we say it has guitar solos on as well, though? I think we should mention that. Like, for anybody who is not that into everything we've talked about, in which case, I don't know, really, maybe why you're listening to this, but there's like...
Donut riffs.
Apart from all the riffs and the groove and everything else we've said about it, there's guitar solos in it too. Like, they've literally got everything in it somehow. Yet it's really catchy and really compact and never overstays its welcome.
Yeah, and it never feels like box ticking either.
No, absolutely not. And the other thing is as well, is like, I wouldn't compare this, certainly not musically, to what bands like, you know, Parkway Drive have done, where they've been like, we're going to make a big bombastic heavy metal album, we're going to kind of expand the sound, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, it does feel like Employed to Serve have maybe started thinking more about kind of bigger crowds and those bigger moments that will grab people live and all that kind of stuff. And when a lot of bands do that, they kind of lose a little, and sometimes the trade-off is worth it, I think, but sometimes they lose a little bit of themselves in that, and it becomes slightly less sincere, which I don't think is necessarily always a bad thing if it's done to a certain, you know, end game. But Employed to Serve haven't done that at all. This still sounds urgent and vital and emotional and like aggressive and pissed off and righteous in all the best ways. Like, it's just fucking great, man. Like I said, I can't really, for my personal taste, I can't really pay a higher praise than I think this might end up being my album of the year. And in a year where we've had a great Iron Maiden album, you know, we're literally talking about one of the greatest debuts of recent times just now with Spirit Box. Like, I think this is, might be my favourite of the whole bunch. It really is that good. So again, like, I hope that people kind of don't sleep on Employed to Serve. It feels like a weird thing to say that because they're so kind of part of the scene here in the UK, but... You know, compared to a band like Spirit Box, they're already this kind of hype monster. I just think it's important to really say just how fucking great this album is. So go and listen to it immediately. Once you've listened to pretty much everything else we're talking about, because we've not really got any bad stuff to talk about this week. What should we move on to next? I think, why don't we talk about Carcass? It seems weird and maybe a sign of just how much huge stuff is coming out at the moment, that the first Carcass album for 8 years felt a little bit glossed over with some of the kind of excitement that I was seeing all over social media on Friday when all these albums were coming out. The last album before this was 2013 Surgical Steel, which was in itself the first new Carcass album for about 17 years at that point, I think. So they are a band happy to take their time when it comes to releasing new material. Obviously there was a kind of break in their very existence in that other break. So this new album, Torn Arteries, it's out now on Nuclear Blast. As I said, it came out on Friday with all these other great records. Surgical Steel was a fucking amazing album as well, it should be said. I think it ranked at number 2 in our Albums of the Year list that year. It was really high up, I remember.
Deservedly so.
Yeah, deservedly so, absolutely. And that was a big year as well. Like, Clutch released a fucking great album that year. Bring Me released Sempiternal. There was like a lot of big albums that year. And Surgical Steel was ranked very highly by our writers when it came out. And it was an album that managed to string together, I guess, all the elements of classic Carcass that made them such a vital band in the first place. But I think more importantly than that, it felt fresh and it felt contemporary. And it felt like it had this kind of more modern production on it that made the songs kind of come out maybe more than a lot of like traditional grindcore and death metal bands maybe do with modern production. And it felt as vital as anything that was going on in the death metal scene at the time. And I feel like, fast forward 8 years, and they've kind of done it again. Like, they just had this knack for being completely timeless and sounding totally classic. It's a cliche, but they sound totally classic and totally contemporary at the same time. I mean, Bill Steer's riffs are razor sharp on this album. There's an abundance of them as well. We just talked about all the riffs. Like, if you want even more riffs after that Employed to Serve album, you've got plenty of them on this Carcass album as well. There's so many. They sound suitably gruesome and grindy when they need to, but they kind of not afraid to still go, kind of go almost like more balls out heavy metal when they need to as well. Jeff Walker's vocals still sound like he's been gargling pond water mixed with screws or something like that. But his lyrics always sound very clear and well pronounced as well, which I think is like, you know, important as well. The songs obviously sound huge. I mean, there's a track on here, Flesh Ripping Sonic Torment Limited, just what a song title, which is just under 10 minutes long. I think that makes it Carcass's longest song ever, I think. And there's never a moment on it where it feels empty or unnecessary. It's just packed with killer riffs and big bloody hooks. And having a death metal song named after a Peep Show quote, The Scythe's Remorseless Swing, is just so quintessentially British, and I feel like the album deserves a 9 out of 10 just on that alone, to be honest. What are you saying about Carcass, Jonathan?
I really love this one. So when Surgical Steel came out, their status was very different from when they were, beforehand, when they, in the era of, Heartwork and the records before that, because I think back then, every album was being compared to the last, or where it kind of fell in Carcass's evolution, and some people like the early stuff, some people like the last stuff. When you've had a break of 17 years and then you come back, it becomes something new in their own right. So I think people were just really happy to have Carcass back. Not saying, no one's going to think, it's not recompute, it's not going to be like sound like any of the other albums, not going to sound like Necroticism or something, to complain that it doesn't sound like Necroticism. And they came back as like a very classic metal band with very Carcass idiosyncrasies. And it was just like, that record was everything I wanted from a metal record at the time. And, this one's not a huge step forward, but it doesn't have to be. It's just, it's basically reaffirming what they are, which is like, a great sort of metal band, and somehow, for the most part, managing to fuse these two kind of fighting wings within themselves, which is that kind of really sludgy sound and basically letting Bill Steer do his thing.
Yeah.
there are moments when there's these guitar breaks and quite sensitive sounding guitar breaks that wouldn't expect to normally fit within a Carcass sound. I think it's in Flesh Ripping Sonic Torment. And there's this really lush sense of break in the middle, and you can almost like hear in the studio them going like, "All right, Bill, we'll let you have that one." It doesn't really add to the song, but at the same time, there's still elements of like, say, Heartwork era Carcass, like in Eleanor Rigor Mortis, that's Eleanor's like waving her arms there.
That was the one that was my favourite on the record, and then I looked up the song title and it had my name in it, and I was like, "This is weird."
yeah, it's got elements of like No Love Lost, which is probably from Carcass Mark One period my favourite Carcass song, because there's just this kind of swishing back and forth and like being knocked about by the groove, and it's kind of visceral, but it just and grisly, but it's just such a clear, crisp groove. So you can hear a little bit elements of that. There's an amazing like killer, it's kind of really snappy groove through Dance of Ixtab, and I just love Jeff's vocals too. There is a comparison you can make, that kind of slightly snarly, almost sarcastic element you get to Dave Mustaine in the way he does the vocals. Like there's a slightly sort of sneery without kind of being off-putting element to the way he does those vocals. But I get that.
I mean, I definitely get that. I mean, I think his vocals are quite unique in that respect. But I just think this is a fucking great album, and I will certainly not undersell one of the most important extreme metal bands of all time. But I think if it wasn't for the fact that I was just so hyped on the new Employed to Serve and hyped on the Spirit Box as well, I probably would have been raving much more about this Carcass album, because it is absolutely great as well. Dom Lawson, who would certainly know a thing or two about death metal and Carcass, he gave this a glowing review of Metal Hammer as well. Another 9 out of 10 for this one. He summed up his review with, "Once again, this is total Carcass. No one does it better. In fact, no one else does it." And I think that really kind of sums up how Carcass are just such a kind of unique force still now, even now in extreme metal. I just realised I didn't reference the MAG review for the Employed to Serve record, but Matt Mills did that one. He loved it very much as well. He gave it an 8 out of 10. And he said that Conquering proves that Employed to Serve can reminisce just as well as they drive forward, opening up a plethora of options for past sounds that they can recreate, but nastier. So yeah, our magazine chums and wonderful writers are kind of backing us on most of this stuff. Anything to say about the Carcass album now, apart from your title track?
No, not really. It's just, I just turned around when that one came on. I was like, this is groovy. What's this one? And it just surprised me that I had my name. But no, I mean, I think Dom and Jonathan are more qualified than me to sort of use their critical voices. But it sounds really immense.
Yeah, it's big. It's fucking great. Also out on Friday was another album, which I think felt, again, just from, you know, I know Twitter's an echo chamber, but just from kind of having a quick look at Twitter and what people were talking about, felt like it went a little bit under the radar. And maybe that's just because it was in such hyped up company. But the new Alien Weaponry album, Tangaroa, out now on Napalm, that came out on Friday as well. Obviously, we are big supporters of this band. We had them on the cover back in January, along with a few others. And they're one of the bands that have really got people excited. I feel like they're one of the kind of the bands that, like, what you'd say, like, quote unquote, like, proper metal fans are most excited about all the kind of younger bands coming out with new albums right now. What did you make of Tangaroa, El? I feel like you're probably the most vocal Alien Weaponry fan out of all of us.
Yeah, I love Alien Weaponry. I did a feature for the mag as well, where I went to the Navajo Nation and saw them play there. And I think they're like an amazing, fantastic, brilliant band, which is why I was a little bit disappointed with this record, which makes me feel really sad to say, actually, because I don't want to feel that way about them, because I think they're amazing at what they do. They tell these stories about Maori history that people don't get told at school in New Zealand, and we kind of don't really know them over here. And there's a lot of stuff about, you know, British colonialism that I didn't know about till I started researching Alien Weaponry, and made me feel kind of like ashamed about what we'd done over there. And they kind of have this educational aspect, and then they have this amazing musical aspect that's, you know, they've been compared with Sepultura just for the fact that they sort of bring in a sort of tribalistic sounds like percussion, and they've got a lot of chanting on there. And you know,
a lot of kind of unique native instrumentation and stuff as well, which is probably,
yeah, and Henry the drummer, like when they play, he does a haka at the beginning and that kind of thing. Like, they're so unique in what they do, and they do what they do so well. So I think for me, yeah, I just don't quite like this as much as the debut. I don't think it's quite as catchy. Like, when you look at the debut record too, they've got a run of five tracks that are so strong, like the first five tracks. They've got Holding My Breath in there, Rapatau, Kai Tangata, and they're all these kind of very sort of catchy, you could have them, well, some of them were singles, kind of singly aspects to them with sort of, what am I thinking of? Just like hooky and vocal harmonies, and they just kind of had something about them where that kind of run into that album was really, really strong. And I feel like Tangaroa, although it starts with Tutu Kawaru, which is kind of quite fearsome. I just feel like it doesn't, I don't know, I think it's just not as catchy, which is why it doesn't hook me in as much. And the production is a little bit more kind of hollow sounding. And I think they're going for that thing where it sounds live. But again, I think the first record to me sounded a little bit more polished. I think they're kind of, there are some songs on this record where it feels a bit like they're live jams that they've turned into songs. Like, oh, I love this riff, or this bit is great, rather than kind of songs on their own terms. But maybe it's unfair, just because I like the ones that are a little bit more like singles. Maybe it's kind of unfair to hold it to that standard in a sense. But yeah, I think for me, it's just not quite as hooky and not quite as compact and not quite as shining. But having said that, there are some really great moments on here. I really like Tangaroa, the title track, and Blinded. I think people know those quite well. Again, that they are kind of very catchy songs, and Tangaroa obviously talking about the horrible things we're doing to the planet, and you know, we're just messing it all up, and it's a dying creature. And again, you know, they're a young band, and they're actually bringing these kind of messages into the music, which is really laudable. And there are some just really great moments, like Ihenga has got this section on it where it's the band and some female vocalists singing. It sounds a bit like a sort of mini choir, and they've got like Buried Underground has kind of got that like very low end sound to it. Ahikar has got that political message. It's got a clip from the Queen in it, you know, when she was going over to New Zealand, and she was talking about feeling at home, but actually the, you know, the British had kind of done all these terrible things there. And yeah, there are some great moments on here. It just doesn't feel quite as, yeah, cohesive, catchy, shiny. It just, I was just left like a little bit wanting. And yeah, it just made me a little bit sad to say that because I'm still a huge supporter of them. I think they're great.
Yeah, I think that's a fair appraisal of it. I would probably agree with that. You know, I like Alien Weaponry a lot. Probably not quite as, quite much of a cheerleader for them as Elle is, but I thought Two was a really great album. I still haven't seen them live. I really do want to see them live because they just got such a great live reputation as well. And I think for me, the production was one of the things that did jar with me a bit on this record. You know, on the song Dad, for instance, like the vocals on that track almost sounded like a demo take or something to me. So I think, and I definitely think you're right, Elle, that does feel like a conscious decision that they've gone for something a bit more raw and live and in the studio. But I think when you've got so many different elements to your sound like Alien Weaponry do, I think you just need a bit more to kind of bring them all out and really make them smash you around the face and you know, get you emotionally and make you feel and all that kind of stuff. But you know, I still definitely think this is like a good album. It's just a good album that's come out at a time where there are a lot of truly great albums coming out. You know, there's a couple of tracks here I'm not too keen on, like Unforgiving feels like a bit ploddy and tool-y in not a great way. Yeah, like I said, the kind of production on Dad left a bit to be desired, but I still think, you know, I thought the singles they put out were really good, for instance. I thought they were sensible choices for the album. And I think as a whole, the record works for me. It's a record I'll definitely be listening to a lot this year, but it's just hard when we compared like a band that's just put out a potential all-time great debut album and a young band in Employed to Serve who are kind of reaching critical mass now in many ways and just have put out the best album of their career, in my opinion. and then comparing that to, you know, Alien Weaponry, and maybe it's not quite up to the standards of what's come before. It's just a slight dip, I think. And maybe
I think there's some bits on there that, yeah, just kind of take you out of the mood of it. Like you mentioned the production on Dad, and there's like the song Kaiwatu. The drumming on that just sounds kind of like tinny and trebly rather than like together. And some of these bits where the songs sound a bit like jammy, like, that, you know, and not very compact. So just kind of moments where you think, oh, this could just be a little bit tightened up, or this sound could have just been brought out a little bit better. I think it just feels like it needs a bit more polish, really.
Fair. Anything to add to that, Sals? I
played it a little bit, and my overall feeling of the album as a whole, like for such a young band such an important message, I felt like it as a whole, it lacked the urgency that I was expecting. So what it made me feel, what we really think about, was just like a more lethargic Gojira. Like Gojira.
They actually love Gojira, just to interject. They're huge fans of Gojira, and they're touring together, and they have actually got a lot of similarities in the way that they talk about their environment. And obviously Gojira just did a huge amount of stuff on their last record, sort of bringing in tribal influences. So that's definitely like a thing.
Yeah, I mean, they had some. I mean, Gojira had some of those before, like on The Art of Dying, which is probably my favorite Gojira song. It sounds like a metal version of Aphex Twin's Didgeridoo, which I've always wanted to hear.
Yeah, that was cool.
There's range of opinions on the new Gojira album, which is slowly growing on me. A few albums I thought were like, when I first heard them, I was really looking forward to, are really growing on me the more they play it. But yeah, when you compare that to the new Gojira album, I just think I feel like it's trailing behind a little bit. And I was surprised by by the lack of urgency that I kind of felt throughout this record, and a bit disappointed.
I think that's fair enough. I think it's a great band who have still put out what is clearly a good album. It's just not quite the greatness we were maybe hoping for from them. On this next step, I mean, for what it's worth, the Elliot Lever, who reviewed it for the magazine, feels differently. He's more kind of passionate about it in general. He gave it an 8 out of 10, so another high score for this month's issue. And he said, with Tangaroa, Alien Weaponry proved they're not just a flash in the pan; they have come of age. So I think that review's also up on the website, so you can go read an alternative take if you so choose. So yeah, not a bad record, but maybe just a little bit of a misstep, maybe not quite the treatment production-wise that we would probably prefer to hear from Alien Weaponry. An album that does have fucking great production because it's so specific to what this band are doing. And we only realised this was coming out this Friday earlier on today, so we kind of added this in at the end. But out this Friday, out tomorrow, as you listen to this podcast, is the new album from Unto Others, Strength, out on Roadrunner Records. I don't know how much we've done on these guys. I feel like we reviewed them live on here when we saw them a couple of years ago. But they are the artists formerly known as Idle Hands, Portland-based high-octane gothic rockers. They've undergone a name change. They are now Unto Others. And this new album, Strength, is their Roadrunner Records debut. You know, the last album was awesome. You know, a lot of hype for this band. I think, Jonathan, you might have seen them more times, but I think we saw them supporting Gaal in London.
No, that's the only time I've seen them. Yeah, okay, I mean, cool. So it's interesting. Yeah, they're playing with Gaal's Verd and Tribulation. And Uwada.
And
we didn't realise at the time. So there was kind of a very 80s vibe. I mean, we didn't kind of maybe realise at the time because the Gaal's Verd album wasn't out yet. But that album had a lot of 80s influences. Obviously, Tribulation does. Uwada, not so much, but they're a fellow Portland band. And yeah, there was a real buzz about the band back then. Like, very occasionally, there's a real buzz about a properly underground band. And it nearly always kind of bears itself out. The fact that now they're signed to Roadrunner shows it. And no, we did review the Idle Hands record, which I thought was also absolutely amazing. Just like such an amazingly, as with this album too, such an amazingly pure synthesis of classic metal and goth and sort of goth and 80s influences. Just like you really can't see the seams. With this amazing kind of atmosphere, and every song's an absolute anthem, and they just write just such amazing, they're just such amazing songwriters. And we made Idle Hands a box review, because I thought it was deserved it. And and suddenly, you know, on the signs of Roadrunner, who obviously know a good thing when they see it. Apparently, lots of people wanted to sign them.
Roadrunner have, I've got to say, a quite phenomenal record with young bands again at the moment. Like the last five or so years, they have really like been back at it with signing really exciting young bands. So I was really kind of excited and pleased when I saw that Unto Others were signed to Roadrunner. And yeah, you're right, Jonathan. They've said, so I've heard, and we may read about at some point, that they're, you know, there are a lot of people interested in them. I was with you, Jonathan. I thought the Idle Hands record was great. I think this Unto Others album is even better. I think it's kind of everything from the first album turned up to another level. I think the guitars are heavier. They're slightly more urgent and front and center for a lot of the songs. I mean, the opening song, Heroin, hinges on this kind of like rumbling, chuggy, almost like thrashy riff. But it's bathed in just the most beautiful, echoey atmospherics. I mean, this album just sounds gorgeous. And I can't think of many records that kind of make me feel swept up in this kind of gothy melodrama, but also make me just want to bang my head clean off. And this album really does that.
Yeah, no, it doesn't just kind of synthesize like metal and kind of 80s music, but classic metal and 80s non-metal music like goth and things like that. But it has also this sense of anthemic, while also sounding kind of quite sort of forlorn in a way. So I mean, that first song, Heron, it's just like when the vocals kick in, it's such a rush. And they've got this kind of really driving beat behind them that just really pushes every song on. So it's kind of like very urban kind of goth of just like, you know, 2 a.m. everything's kind of run down, you know, in the city kind of goth feeling. So it's got this kind of very urban sound to it. And yeah, just, and there's songs which, like, even like Iran, where they've got like really obvious Smith references. I'm trying to think of the name of the song now, but I think it's the song called Why, and also particularly, but Little Bird has a little element of it as well. But the way they kind of mix us all in, and they have this kind of a sense of cool and a sense of forlornness about them that's really genuinely emotional as well as just make you want to punch your fist in the air every time. It's just, it's such a, not that goth hasn't been around on the underground for the last 5 years, I think, in Solitude and
Tribulation Beast Milk
Beast Milk helped kick off, and then Tribulation switched from being a death metal band to a goth band, you know, to a gothic sounding band. I think Tribulation have made a few sort of proper anthems, but here every song is an anthem, and he has this kind of like really resonant baritone that's, you know, in the wrong hands. And Grave Pleasures, you know, who used to be Beast Milk, do the same thing. It's playing with being slightly hammy, but really taking you in the moment at the same time. And it's really heartfelt as well.
I think the Tribulation thing that you mentioned is quite telling, because, you know, Tribulation are a great band. I love those records, but I never found them quite as propulsive as Unto Others are. They really with Tribulation, I kind of watch them live, and you're right, they're not trying to be that. But with Tribulation, watching them live, I kind of get lost in it, and like there's a couple of maybe headbanging moments. But with Unto Others, I could really see myself like, you can fucking mosh to this band. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's some riffs in here that are proper like da 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 da, and they really go off. Like, there's big Maiden galloping kind of twin harmonies as well. I think Downtown is the one that has a lot of that.
There's some bit of Maiden in there.
Yeah, definitely. And there's big crunchy riff in the midsection on When Will God's Work Be Done. There's blast beats in that song as well that sound great. But it's all kind of swathed in this like gothic melodrama. It's just great. It's so unique. I think what excites me about this band as well is that I think you could just place them on so many bills. They could support Iron Maiden, but they could support like Cradle of Filth or something. Do you know what I mean? Like, you could put them like in so many different pockets, and they will go down so well with so many different crowds. I think the sky's the limit for this band, really, which is mad when you think where they've come from.
Yeah, I mean, it's their second album, so I think it doesn't quite have the urgency of the first album. That's not a bad thing. I think it's less raw. I think it's very much a second album in the sense.
That's interesting. I find it more urgent, I think, because of the way the guitars are kind of elevated in it a bit.
I kind of felt it's got maybe a slightly broader scope without the without the sort of like straightforward. It's got a bit more atmosphere and a bit slightly more, tiny little bit more drawn out. That doesn't take away from the, you know, the epic nature of the songs. Just the absolute thrill you get. And actually, when you listen to them, you don't think about anything, because it's so perfectly synthesized, you don't think about anything else but being where these bits are coming from. Maybe you go, oh, that sounds a bit like the Smiths, that's weird, but they get away with it because it puts you so much in the moment. And it's really, even though it shouldn't be rocket science, it's really hard to channel classic rock to classic, or channel classic metal. Imagine how many bands try to be like Maiden and they don't really get it. And you can hear on the opening riff for Hell Is for Children, there's a real Maiden element there. But it's not rocket science, but so few.
Well, that's a Pat Benatar cover.
Oh, well, they've added Maiden to it.
They have, yeah, they totally have, because I didn't know that off the top of my head, but I listened to the song, and it was one of those songs, like, it kind of jumped out at me, and it just felt a tiny bit different. And I was like, and then I looked at the song title, and I was like, Hell Is for Children, like, I feel like I've heard that before. And then I googled it, and it's a Pat Benatar song, but it fits so well in this album.
Just goes to show how much they take everything and make it totally their own.
They did, yeah, because it like, you could only, obviously, that, you know, when you listen to the original, you can kind of hear that, you know, if you can hear it in there, it is a kind of 80s banger, but at least I presume it's from the 80s. I just presume everything Pat Benatar done was from the 80s. But it's like, yeah, it just works so well, and it's just so perfectly placed and executed. And yeah, it's just really good fun. I think this is just another world-class album that's come out. I'm not normally quite so effusive about absolutely everything. Most stuff that's coming out in a certain period, but it's just hard not to just get swept up in all the great stuff that's out there at the moment. I mean, yeah, it's just another absolute banger of an album. Strength by Unto Others is out. this Friday on Roadrunner Records. And if you haven't listened to any other albums we've listened to, give them all your full attention. Carcass, Torn Arteries is great. Alien Weaponry, Tangaroa. Okay, we're not quite as keen on it as a debut, but it's still worth your time. The Employed to Serve, Employed to Serve album is just astonishingly good. And the Spirit Box record is one of the best debut albums of recent years, quite frankly. So much great music out there at the moment. And there is another date coming up imminently, which I think has, I can't remember quite off the top of my head, all the releases on it. But there's like another date, I think, in October, where there's like, I think the Trivium album's coming then. There's a Cradle album. There's a Sleep Token album. There's a Bullet album coming. Like, there's so much more stuff coming in the next month or so. So we'll have plenty more big reviews to be dishing out as well. In the meantime, don't forget to pick up the latest issue of Metal Hammer magazine, our big all-star tribute to the one and only Joey Jordison. You can go to tinyurl.com/gethammer to pick up your copy or go to your nearest Stocking UK shop. Also go and visit our wonderful sponsors, Killstar, over at tinyurl.com/killstarhammer. Go check out all their awesome stuff. And we will see you next week right here on the Metal Hammer podcast. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.